Look, you get to a certain age and you want to be a little more serious when it comes to your shirt. Anybody who's worn a dress shirt knows just how uncomfortable it can be and how annoying it is when they bunch up under a sweater. So you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the dress collar polo. Their shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them. So they give you that dress shirt look, but it's an extremely comfortable polo feel. Now, these are shirts you can wear with anything. Wear them with a blazer. Wear them under a sweater. Wear them solo as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. Got a date? Perfect. Heading out to golf? Again, perfect. What about going to the office? Same thing. Collars & Co. has exploded into the marketplace. I'm guessing you have seen them. They've gone viral many times on social media. Their collars don't flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. They also have an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. So if you're looking for a performance dress shirt or a polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use the promo code MEDIA for 15% off any purchase of $100 or more. Again, promo code MEDIA for 15% off any purchase of $100 or more. Collars & Co.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Jake Galley. This is our usual Saturday roundtable with two of the longtime regulars. John Lewis is the founder and editor of Sports Media Watch, the essential sports viewership website in the United States. Austin Karp is a... I don't even know what your title is these days, Austin. I will call you a media writer for Sports Business Journal. But do you actually have a formal title? I work with you. I don't even know this.
It's
what
just
is it?
Media Report. We had to shorten it from the nine titles, you know, Viceroy of Audience Metrics at SBJ that it was the prior couple decades. Well, we'll just go with Media Report.
Okay. Do you guys find it as hilarious as I do over the years that all of us have covered the ESPNs and Foxes of the world when you see someone like with having a vice president title at one of these places and it's like 70 like words, you know, it's like executive vice president of production and like Josh Krulowitz, like house hunting or something like it's just it is never ending on some of these, particularly ESPN, John Lewis. I feel they're the worldwide leader in titles.
Well, you know, I've always thought it was an unfortunate thing that Scott Van Pelt was never a senior vice president.
One of the rare. Yeah, I'll take Scott's I'd take Scott's contract over the title, quite frankly. And any Greenberg, McAfee, Smith, Van Pelt. The money's much better than the title. All right. Anyway, enough of this nonsense. We're going to start with the World Cup. And actually, with the day we're taping this, obviously, the United States has a massive game against Australia. By the time you listen to this podcast, that result will be in. And the United States' prospects will be much, much clearer after that game. I would be stunned if they are not in the knockout round. But the result of this game, obviously, will be really, really important. But it gets me to this, John Lewis. The World Cup has had a ton of positive stories, and we will start on the positive stories that is germane to this podcast, and that is viewership. I think the three of us would have expected that the United States men's national team would do great numbers. Like anybody who has worked in the business understands, home World Cup, the start times are incredible. It's essentially a can't miss tournament, and when it comes to the American team, I must admit, though, what I'm a little surprised at, at least a touch surprised at, is to see how big some of these non-US games are, whether it's Argentina or Spain. Like, you know, I expected millions, but man, I'm gonna be honest, I didn't expect like a 9 or 8 million number for like Argentina's first game. That is unbelievable. Yeah. And what I think it sets up to me is, if you extrapolate this to the finals, we may get 30, 40 million people watching that final, regardless of the United States is in. If the United States is in it, we're talking another ball game. But yeah. I don't know, John, have you been surprised like I have in terms of some of these non-US games? Because, I mean, the numbers are amazing.
Carolina Vegas was the fifth most watched Stanley Cup final on record, right? In that context, nothing surprises me.
Yeah.
Because the viewership is at a level now where, I mean, nothing is inflated. Everything is actually still undercounted. None of these numbers are still at the level that they should be, because it's almost impossible to really accurately capture the full breadth of sports viewing, right? If you saw the crowds watching the Knicks, I mean, it's unbelievable. But at the same time, when we're comparing the previous years and to what we expect viewership to be, we're through the looking glass a little bit now. So to me, these World Cup numbers have been obviously off the charts. I'm going to talk specifically about the Fox numbers, because obviously Telemundo is using a slightly different, not just Adobe Analytics, but also they're doing match window. Fox is including the pre-match, so the Fox numbers are the official Nielsen numbers. You're looking at these figures, and I mean, as you said, you're seeing numbers that for the Mexico match, for the Australia match the other night, I mean, for the Haiti-Scotland match.
That was an amazing one. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's obviously just an incredible level of interest. Anytime you have one of these events in the United States or even just in North America, you get the benefit not only of familiarity. Oh, I know this place. This is here. This is local. You also get the benefit of an optimized schedule, which, you know, which actually kind of makes it a little odd that the USA is playing on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
It is a national holiday, Juneteenth. But you have the ability. There's no morning matches. You go back to the most recent World Cup on the women's side, the USA was playing at 4 a.m. There's nothing like that here. So that definitely helps. But, I mean, these numbers are wild. And as you said, 30 or 40 million, I could see that again, not for a United States match.
All right, Austin, let me go to you. You know, one of my thoughts on this is maybe we are just in the era of eventizing, to use the Netflix word, and this is an event and a big one, and maybe it's just people want to be part of it. Like, again, I'll just give you sort of an example of one where I even like double look. So Belgium, Egypt, that was a 3 o'clock start. They averaged 4.8 million viewers for that game. I mean, that's not far away from like a Stanley Cup final game. Forget about this series. You know what I'm saying? Like that is an unbelievable viewership number. And again, as John pointed out, like out of home viewing obviously has made this thing soar. But I think it's beyond that. Like I think there is a feeling in the United States right now that people want to be associated with this tournament. And for many people who obviously cannot go to the games, their way to associate with the tournament is to watch it on TV somewhere.
Yeah, it has such a huge, big event feel to it, and we're already into the second week. And think about it during an Olympics. This is when we're like, all right, like I've kind of maybe had enough of the Olympics. Let's get to that closing ceremony. I still feel like we're on the rise here in terms of fan interest. And like you said, the United States is involved. We're playing today on Friday. We haven't even gotten to the knockout stages yet, and we're seeing just these incredible numbers. The number that really surprised me that was put out there by – talk about guys with long titles. We'll just go with Fox's Mike Mulvihill because I just can't remember all the names.
The director of strategy and analytics.
Insights and analytics and research. And there's a whole lot going on there. But talking about the out-of-home providing like a 25% lift for a lot of these games and even more maybe for like a U.S. match, people are just jumping into bars and restaurants to watch this thing. Doesn't matter who's on. They just want to jump in and see – a World Cup game, and they're staying there. And that's an incredible number for me. I didn't think it was going to be that high, but it's proven to be. And like you talked about, I've some of the, oh, I cannot believe type numbers, like 10 million just on Fox for that Brazil game. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's an incredible number.
Yeah, and this is why, again, like, this is why I think that the final is going to do an insane number based on shattering the previous mark. But again, I'm with you, Austin. I think this is still an ascendancy thing. And we're going to, you know, I appreciate Mike Mulvihill actually putting that stuff out on social media because it's interesting. I like going behind some of the numbers, and everybody's going to obviously, you know, whoever you work for, you're going to skew the context as best you can to your network. But when he and Flora Kelly, who's his equivalent at ESPN, put out stuff online, I personally appreciate that. I know you two guys do as well. John, let me go to you. Now, this is something that's become very much a sports business story as well as a soccer story. And that's FIFA's decision to do hydration breaks. What they've done, right, is turned a game that that formerly was two halves into essentially a game now in many ways that's four quarters. And for the Foxes of the world and the Telemundos and all the world host broadcasters, they now have the ability to get, you know, think of how many more ad spots during the game. Fox has made the decision for the most part to leave the field, right, and to do commercials and then come back. They've had a couple of boxes like that I've seen, you know, picture in picture. But for the most part, I think the majority, they've gone there. Thank you to Sports Business Journal, who sort of looked at this stuff. A lot of European broadcasters, I think, have made the decision to stay on the field and then just to have their people talk about it. I know in Mexico, they're going to commercials. I can tell you in Canada, TSN has decided to go to commercials. So this is like, John, this feels like a monster, like, kind of sports business story in the fact that, like, it's changed one of the most famous games that exists in soccer and has given these companies, like, the ability to make millions upon millions of new dollars. What's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, obviously, ad breaks are great for the people who are paying all the money to hear. Well, Fox isn't paying that much money to hear this, actually. But, you know, as a general rule, it's great. One of the things, you know, I take it back to the TV ratings. Fox is putting out numbers that include the pre-match because that's the official Nielsen window. Right. The official Nielsen window has to include pre-match because there's no ad breaks. Well, if you get to a point where there's ad breaks, maybe now you can cut that pre-match portion off and make the match window the official Nielsen window.
Which means higher viewership numbers.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. ESPN used to do, yeah.
Fox is shortchanging itself a pretty decent amount of viewers, I would imagine. I mean, just based on what we've seen in the past. You know, the record that Fox put out the other day, they said, I think it was at the time, 16.9. It ended up being over 18 million.
Yeah.
But they said it was a record, and people thought, well, didn't ESPN get 18 million for a U.S. match against Portugal back in 14? Well, yeah, they did. That was the match window number. But if you include the pre-match, that record audience from 2014 was only 13.8 million.
That's right.
So you can see the impact of that pre-match portion being included in the numbers. And if the more of these hydration breaks, if they allow eventually for that pre-match portion to get lopped off, that'll make a huge difference.
Austin, my sense is, I actually doing a story on this for CBC Sports. My sense is, in talking to a lot of, you know, sort of former executives and sports business people, like, this is now here to stay. Like, I think if you're a World Cup fan, I think you are going to have these hydration breaks heading forward, no matter where the location is. And I think if you're FIFA and the host broadcasters, you absolutely are going to want this. If you're FIFA, you can charge more for your rights because there's now more revenue coming in. And if you're the host broadcasters, you know, and you get a World Cup like in your home country, oh my God, like, just, you know, just think of what Fox is charging for those breaks. So to me, this is the present and the future. And then I start to think about, could we see this in Champions League? Could we see this in the Premier League? Could we see this in MLS? I don't see any reason why this wouldn't start extending to those tournaments and leagues as well. How do you see it?
Yes to everything you just said. I think it's absolutely here to stay in the World Cup. Heck, we're seeing it at indoor venues during this World Cup. They don't really need a hydration break at SoFi, LA Stadium, whatever the hell it's called during this tournament. They're inside. It's air conditioned. They're going to have a lot of these indoor games in other countries too. The hydration breaks are going to stay. And I kind of talked about it on the SBJ pod this week. MLS, if you're trying to make your media rights a little more valuable out there, trying to add a little appeal down the road when you come back out to market, I don't know why you're not thinking about a hydration break. It just makes sense. And you see, I think Wall Street Journal put out some prices on what Fox is getting for some of these.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was crazy numbers.
100,000 for 30-second ads. If it's the U.S., it's 750,000 or maybe close to a million. Like,
that's just for the group stage. Think about what it's going to be.
And it makes sense. Like, you know, we reported before the tournament that there was going to be this hybrid model. But during that first week, the only thing hybrid about that model is sometimes they came back a couple of seconds early before the hydration break was done to have some booth talk. Okay. Now we've seen, like, during the Mexico match on Thursday, you had, like you said, the picture in picture. I have to think that I think you may even see picture in picture during this U.S. match on Friday, maybe in the second half or something like that. They're going to utilize that a little more. It is fan-friendly, but they were making a lot of money there during that first week. They were printing money with those hydration break ads.
Yeah. No, they're going to be printing money for this whole tournament. This will be the most successful soccer tournament for a broadcaster in terms of money coming in the history of U.S. World Cup broadcasts. John, let me ask you this. One of the, you know, something that's and this is very subjective, just depending on how you like it, but there's always, during the World Cup in particular, there's always conversation about the studio show. You know, the broadcast itself, interestingly enough, I don't see, and I think Fox does a good job with their broadcast. But it's interesting. Like when I go on social media, and particularly on X, on Twitter, I rarely see anybody having massive commentary about John Strong and Stu Holden or Landon Donovan and Ian Dark. Everything is focused on the studio and what you think of Alexi Lalas or Zlatan Ibrahimovic or Rebecca Lowe or Thierry Henry, et cetera. Do you have any broad thoughts on what you've seen in terms of Fox's studio coverage? Because the reality is, at least from my perspective, having written this for a long time, I think the World Cup host broadcaster is almost always judged in terms of like performance on how the studio does versus how the game does, which is interesting because I think in other sports, it's usually the reverse. It's how the game is versus the studio. That's at least my take.
Didn't Alexi Lalas work for ESPN?
He did. Yep. Before heading to Fox. Correct.
Yeah. I don't remember there being much talk about his work back then or any controversy. I think probably it helped, in no disrespect to Rebecca Lowe or to Rob Stone, but it probably helped to be working with Bob Lee and Mike Tirico. And
from my perspective, the sort of Skip Bayless kind of heel character just wasn't as heightened at ESPN as it is at Fox. And Fox loves that, by the way. Let's not pretend on anything. Fox is very happy with negative columns and positive columns because it's all publicity for the studio show. But I didn't mean to interrupt you, John, but I think you're correct. I think it's the tenor of ESPN, how they did the coverage. There were no hot takers during their World Cup coverage. They treated it differently.
Well, ESPN has never had an Olympics, but they treated it like they would have treated an Olympics.
Great point.
It was very ABC for ESPN, you know? You wouldn't have been surprised to see Jim McKay show up on those broadcasts. So I think that tenor makes it different. Fox likes to bring the Fox attitude to everything. You remember when they were going to get the Olympics they were trying to, and it was going to be Joe Buck who was going to be hosting?
Yeah.
I mean, that's no dig against Joe Buck, but they don't have the personnel to do something a little bit more prestigious. They never have, and they never will. It's Fox. Fox will never be prestigious, right? I'm not going into the archives here, but I just think it's kind of worth pointing out. Many years ago, they used to break out this kind of ornate, almost kind of, you know, old school music for the World Series. You remember this? They'd go away from their normal theme and they'd bring out this theme that sounded like they were trying to make it sound like, you know.
Like Mel Allen and
Yeah. I mean, they tried it in the past and it's just not a great fit for them. So they have to do it the way that they have to do it. And it is what it is.
All right, awesome. Let me go to you. The one thing I'd push back on with John a little bit is I do think if you bring in Rebecca Lowe, you kind of class the place up a little bit because Rebecca Lowe to me is someone obviously who's done Olympics and could do that. But John's not wrong in the larger, like Fox would readily admit and has readily admit, like they like to do stuff with attitude. Like they like a lot of, I don't want to say nonconformity, but they don't mind if you're like,
edgy. It's edgy.
Yeah. You like, I mean, you know, they're not edgy, like old school HBO edgy, but for sports TV, they're a different kind of edgy. They're not as they're not as conservative as ESPN on this stuff. And in some ways I admire that. But the studio Austin always, it seems like for the World Cup, like the focus is on that. And, you know, you just like inevitably, like I think this is my sort of quick take on it. And you can tell me, Austin, if you agree or not. The diehard soccer fan and the mature soccer fan in the United States, I think expects a different kind of analyst than just like the America's great. We're going to beat them 5-1. Like they're now expecting like real tactical talk. They're expecting the kind of stuff that they get with like basketball podcast. You know what I'm saying? Like more analytical.
Sophisticated fan.
Right. Like it's not 2002 anymore. And I think some of the criticism when it comes to like if you have a Lalas or someone like that is that that kind of talk hasn't matured into 2026 when there's a different kind of soccer fan. If I'm playing the Fox executive, my counter is we have that. But there's also value in having this guy who is a former American player who's waving the flag all the time. So that's how do you see it? I'm trying to at least try to be fair in terms of how like the larger context might look.
In terms of U.S. soccer analysts, right now, I think coming into this tournament, Alexei Lalas was still the most recognized name.
More than Taylor Twellman, you think?
I think so. For better or worse, I think Alexei Lalas still was the bigger name. I'm not sure that that's the case going forward. I'd love to see somebody else get a crack at that maybe in 4 years. But coming in, I agree with the decision that he was the top guy. But I love what they did in going after names that have that global appeal, that bring significance to the studio show. And Zlatan does that. Henri does that. So they've established that. And they're kind of I don't know if it's a bad look for Lalas, how these interactions are going. But he's not on the same level accomplishment-wise as those two were on the pitch.
To me, Thierry Henry, Clarence Seedorf, Chicharito Hernandez, mm-hmm. those have been the best guys that I've heard. Like what they I will give them credit. I think they've upgraded their studio stuff. The issue, at least for me, and you know, I don't think I'm going to write on this. I know Marchand has, is that when you are privy to seeing how other broadcasters in other countries do it, as I do, you become stunned at how much more that they offer in terms of like depth and so, like an intellectual look at soccer than Fox does. And if you're a hardcore soccer fan who knows the shit out of the sport, I understand your frustration on that. I still think their broadcast is very much playing to the casual fan who probably only tunes into one soccer game every 4 years. I don't particularly agree with that, but that's my thought as to how they're doing it.
Somebody I would have liked to have seen, if we're going to have, you have to have a U.S. analyst, and I get that.
But for sure. Yeah.
Maybe you mix it up a little bit. I would have loved to have seen more, and I'd like to see more of Clint Dempsey. I think he's got the attitude. I think he has the credentials, and I think he has more appeal to this younger generation. Like, a lot of people just never saw Lalas play. I barely saw Lalas play. You weren't getting Serie A games back in the late 90s when he finally made it over there. Yeah. Now you can. People grew up watching Dempsey, whether he was playing domestically or whether he was playing abroad or whether he was playing for the U.S. national team. It's a name and a face that people know. And he has attitude, and he can back everything up. He's done real well.
All right. Good. I mean, 20 minutes of soccer talk. I'm proud of both of you. Well done. All right. We'll do a quick recap of the NBA Finals and the NHL Stanley Cup Final viewership, because I haven't had both of you on this. So Game 5 of the NBA Finals does 24.5 million viewers. The series, John, do you know off the top of your head what that series clocked in at average-wise?
Yeah, 9.6 rating, 20.6 million viewers.
Okay, all right. Obviously an incredible story for the NBA, most watched since 2018.
Most watched since 1998, highest rating.
Yeah, correct, right. Most watched since 1998. All right, so let me go. I'll start with you, John, on this. If you're in the NBA, obviously you have an incredible viewership story. The games were incredibly compelling. You know, we're just coming off the New York City parade, which was great. I hate to sort of think this way, but man, there is a part of me that wishes this got to a game 6 or 7. Because then you start to think, oh my God, like what could the number have been, right?
Well, yeah, but you do have that World Cup competition. I mean, the fact that they, you know, that was 12 million. Let me not combine the Fox and Telemundo, because it's just too different. But basically, I'm sure at least 10 million or approaching 10 million for that Haiti-Scotland match. And obviously, Messi, that match was going to be pretty significant competition Tuesday. Tonight, I'm pretty sure, who plays tonight?
The U.S. plays at 3.
Brazil plays in the window that the NBA Finals would have been on. So, I mean, look, obviously that was not slowing down this series. But going up against Argentina on Tuesday and Brazil on Friday.
Yeah, interesting.
I just have to feel like there would have been some impact there. Probably more impact on the World Cup than on the NBA, given how the series has been. But it takes a little bit from each. So, to me, obviously, you also want to leave a little bit for next year if you're the NBA. I think it was great for baseball that Dodgers-Yankees went 5, because that allowed Dodgers-Blue Jays to have a shot at beating that series the next year, which it did.
That's interesting.
So if you're the NBA, you know, obviously you're probably not going to match this series again for a while in terms of a five-game average. But if you get a seven-game series next year that's of sufficient quality, maybe you can kind of get a little bit close to that average. Who knows? So I think you don't necessarily want to max it out all the time. This wasn't the one to max out, I don't think.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't know if I agree with John on that. I think you want to max out and get to $50 million and just like put that in the book. But Austin, you can certainly comment on that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was, do you see any momentum that carries over? Like, are people now interested in the Knicks or the Spurs, like more in 2026, 2027, where they'll check out a regular season game versus obviously how excited people were for the final?
I think people were always interested in the Knicks. You're always going to get that Knicks interest, and I'm not sure how much room there was to grow there. Where you finally got to see was that national interest around Wembanyama and what he can do. And
yeah,
you'll see more national games, maybe more national followings. Let's see how some of those games are doing. Can they be a team, the Spurs, over these next few years that can draw a significant national audience? So the TV partners are really maxing out on those Spurs appearances, but while the NBA may have loved a five-game series, Disney advertising wasn't liking that. They were breaking even on sales here. They want to get 6 and 7 to really make that money.
Yeah.
I mean, they got it last year. They went to 7. And like John said, it leaves some opportunity. Maybe next year you can go to 6, 7 and try to get maybe something close to an audience number reflecting this. I don't know that you're going to. This was such a once-in-a-generation sort of thing. I don't know how the ceiling goes higher on the Knicks. I think it would be you. I think you put them on opening night. Okay, you do the banner raising. I think that'll be an incredible number, probably among the most watched opening nights, you know, in history. Seeing the banners raised at the Garden and the star power and what they're able to do there and alt cast this and that. But I think the NBA still has to figure out these faces. Who are going to be who's going to join Brunson at this next level, and join Wembanyama, because we're running out of time with Steph. We're running out of time with Bron and KD. Like, somebody, there have to be multiple names to make this thing all work.
That's a great point.
We're out of time with LeBron and Steph. I mean, I put together this chart the other day, or I guess yesterday. LeBron made it to the second round of the playoffs. There wasn't a single Laker game in the top 20 of this year's postseason, right?
Wow.
And the Lakers played 10 games. Last year, they played 5 games, and even all the way through the finals, their first round game against Minnesota was still one of the 10 most watched of the postseason. And if you include all of the games last season, all of the games, Lakers, who were knocked out in the first round in 5 games, played in 2 of the top 10 games. And one of them was against Steph Curry on Christmas Day, right? You had the 7 finals games. You had, I think, 1 in the conference finals with Indiana and New York. And then you had 2 Laker games in there. This year, no Lakers in the top 20, no Warriors in the top 20. I think this media rights deal especially has kind of pushed that era maybe further into the past. And look, maybe the Lakers make a deep run next year. Maybe you get Lakers-Knicks. But the NBA is not dependent on LeBron anymore, not on Steph either.
And who's going to be next? I mean, the draft is on Tuesday, okay? And everyone talks about this being a historically strong draft in terms of talent. And that could be great. These guys could become must-see TV. But those three teams at the top of the board there,
that's the
DC, Utah, and Memphis, these are not Christmas Day NBA teams right now. And these guys better be historically good talent-wise if they're going to make markets like that stand out.
Well, I would say the one thing on that, though, is, it wasn't so long ago that the Spurs were horrible before Wembanyama. So, you can't turn it around. But, yes, Washington, Utah, these are not teams that, you're going to load up in national windows, at least not next year, unless one of the, unless you get a draft pick who's like, this is the next LeBron, this is the next Jordan, and then...
No, if DeBanza or, Peterson from Kansas turn out to be the next Cooper Flagg type of thing and really just...
Then it gets interesting, right, yeah.
I mean, how many times during the season, John, you see it, you see the teams flexed out, okay?
Yep.
Yeah, if we see a lot of, Wizards or Jazz getting flexed into national windows, you'll know that you have that sort of appeal developed.
Those guys are good. The one interesting thing, and then we'll move on quickly to the NHL, that I'm looking at is if LeBron does announce before the season that this is his last season, that does give a lot of it'll give a lot of juice to everything that's going to happen during the year, from the Christmas Day stuff to opening day, and then to John's point, the playoffs. If LeBron has made a definitive, this is it, those, let's say the Lakers make the playoffs, those Laker playoff games will do amazing numbers just because it will be your last chance to see, you know, essentially the second most famous player in the last 40 years.
Assuming he's back there. Assuming he's back there.
Yeah, yeah. He could also retire like in the summer and be like, I'm done. All right, John, let me go to you.
Go ahead. You know, it could have been LeBron's last game against OKC, right? Game four. And that was not a particularly strong.
But he never made the announcement that
if he announces it, yeah.
Yeah, I do think there's a difference, John. Like if he says I'm done, I think you got to take the guy's sort of word for it that he's done, and then you pay.
And then we got to put up with all those Derek Jeter type gifts he gets before every game, surfboards in LA. Yeah. And
I like LeBron, but I also think LeBron is the kind of guy who would like to do the retirement tour. So I would not be surprised, and the NBA would love that because that's great publicity for them. All right, John, Game 6, Hurricanes Knights. 5.9 million viewers for ABC on a Sunday night. Excellent, excellent viewership number for that series. That series did really, really well. NHL had a great momentum story, John. Their female viewership was up. Their 18 to 34 viewership was up. You know, you see those two markets. We're not talking about mega markets. And they did really, really well. So once again, the NHL has had a great 18-month stretch, whatever that is, from the Four Nations to the Olympic gold medal to a great postseason. And 2 years from now, they're doing their media rights. You know, we'll see. That's still a ways away. But if you're the NHL and Gary Bettman, like you are in as good a spot as you have been in a long time.
Well, you missed one in that 18-month stretch, and that was last year's Cup final that did so poorly on TNT Sports, right?
Yeah.
Because every other year, the Stanley Cup final is on cable. And next year, for the final time, it's going to be on cable. I do not believe that even if the Paramount deal goes through, that it will be done in time to make the kind of change that would need to be made.
You don't think there's a way to get it out on CBS by next June?
The deal is done as far as I understand. Didn't that go through on Friday, the Paramount WBD deal?
In the U.S., I thought it did.
Yeah, but that's not complete yet. I mean, it's not going to close yet. They still have to go through the, you know, overseas approvals, and there's potential challenges from
in each state. That's true.
I don't think even if it goes through as quickly as they're thinking, that that's enough time to say we're going to move this Cup final from cable to broadcast. One, you know, I'm not 100% sure what the contract allows.
That's a great point, too. Yeah, I don't know either.
And, you know, ultimately, if you're ESPN and ABC, you signed a contract that made ABC the broadcast television home of the NHL. Now, maybe they won't have a problem with it, but there are other factors. So I'm going to assume that Cup final is going to be on cable next year. And if it is, it's going to be awfully hard to keep up that momentum because I'm pretty sure TNT hasn't even gotten $3 million for a single Cup final game yet. And, you know, that's going to be a problem. But the other side of it is this TV deal has brought Cup Finals exclusively to broadcast TV for the first time. This was the third one, most successful one, the only Cup Final where six games had at least 4 million viewers, the only one. Because even the really hot ones from back in the 2010s, you'd have two games on NBCSN. So a lot to feel good about, and this is probably the model for the next deal. Every Cup Final game needs to be on broadcast television. At this point, the kind of audiences that the NHL gets, back in the day, you could look at 4 or 5 million viewers and say you can get better numbers for Celebrity Family Feud. Nowadays, these are big ticket events for a broadcast network, and NHL should be exclusively there for the Cup Final.
Austin, I want to start with you. Some broad thoughts on what was probably the biggest media news of last week, which was this past week, I should say, Fox's $22 billion acquisition of Roku, and now their ability to control distribution—that's a distribution deal, not a content deal—and But a lot of a lot of these media analyst types on Wall Street like really liked it. They thought it was a smart deal. The Street at the moment doesn't like it. Fox's stock like dropped like a rock, but you can understand the strategy on this, and I wanted to get a sense from you how you saw it, and then I'll go to you, John.
I saw it as a really smart play, especially how viewing is evolving. If you think about just the distribution side, you're talking about, what, globally 100 million televisions or homes have some sort of Roku set. I know I've had it for years. It's in just about every TV that I buy, and they get a cut now. All those apps that you see on there, whether it's Prime Video or ESPN or the MLB Extra Innings app or NBA, whatever, they're getting a cut of that every time you're getting that service there. So it gets them into the distribution game, which I think is really smart. And you're competing with your Amazon Fire Sticks out there, and you're competing maybe with Vizio or Samsung TVs. Those are your competitors now in that set. And anybody else that wants to get into that and build their own platform. So you got to future-proof it a little bit. And then you got the Roku channel. They were already in business, Fox, with they had Tubi, and now they get another channel like that that has like a bigger slice of the streaming pie than an HBO Max does, than Apple TV does, than I think Paramount Plus. It's up there in terms of an audience. So they can build off that. And maybe you might see some sports like you've seen with Tubi. Saw it Super Bowl. We saw it with some of these World Cup matches for the U.S. You might start to see some simulcasts on there as well. That can help jazz up an audience a little bit. So I think there are a lot of angles here that Fox can take advantage of.
What about you, John?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is everything Austin said, obviously pretty shrewd, but it's also Fox trying to have their cake and eat it too. They're the big, you know, opposing streaming. Now they're getting full bore into streaming. And I do think I think if you happen to be one of the leagues now facing federal scrutiny, because it seems like Fox put, you know, a bug in the air of people in power, you might look at this with a bit of an interested expression. Let's put it that way. Because, look, Fox has really put itself out there on the idea that streaming is a fatal threat to, you know, everything people hold dear, not just their business, right, but also all the local news. And, you know, it's amazing to hear Fox talking up localism and the importance of local news. But look, I do think it's certainly a smart move. But it's also a move that I think lays bare that a lot of the narrative coming out of Fox has been, as I think a lot of people expect or suspected, pretty self-serving.
Wait, a Fox self-serving, John? I'm stunned at this development. Yeah.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's finish up with this. And again, I don't do a ton of UFC on this podcast, mostly just because, like, I just it's not really a sport I follow. Obviously, I respect how these great athletes and stuff. But this, obviously, you could not live in the United States, perhaps you cannot live anywhere in the world without obviously having seen that the UFC fight was held at the White House, and the numbers have come in for UFC Freedom 250 from the White House lawn. They drew or delivered 7 million viewers on Paramount Plus. That's the Nielsen measured figures. And then when you add in, is it the streaming, Austin, that gets you to like 8.2 million in terms of an average?
Add in what, the Latin American market?
Latin American market, I'm sorry.
So we're talking about an Eastern Hemisphere number here. Yeah.
Okay, Eastern Hemisphere number, right.
Or Western Hemisphere, excuse me.
And then again, I believe the UFC and Paramount obviously put out like whatever the reach number was, which was like 17 million or something like that.
Some people got caught up with that. Unquestionably.
And then Paramount Plus obviously did great numbers in terms of like added subs and stuff like that. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, like in their history. So here's my thing, Austin. That is a great viewership story in itself, right? Like to get those kind of numbers for a UFC fight, you know, 7 million plus in the United States is great. What becomes hilarious, though, is the people who sort of sent out like these ridiculous, it's going to top the Super Bowl. I think I heard Joe Rogan say something to the effect of like, it's going to do 150 million eyeballs. It was so crazy to me that like they had a great viewership story, or they still have a great viewership story, but it does get a little lost in some of this hyperbole where people are just losing their mind. Like, you just like, I don't even know how anybody, unless you're really just trying to lie to people, just logically could even step back and say, how on earth could this thing like do a Super Bowl number? Nothing does a Super Bowl number except the Super Bowl. Anyway, I wanted to get your sense, Austin, how you saw it.
You know, there's a reason I don't chime in on quantum mechanics, because I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about when it comes to that stuff. And politicians who don't understand viewership numbers really should just, you know, not really talk about it. If you don't know what you're talking about, don't get into it. It was not even close. Never mind the Super Bowl. It only fell around 117 million viewers short there.
Right.
But I mean, it wasn't even, this was barely an NFL Network type audience. It was a great audience. It was so good. Like, this is the first time Paramount Plus has put out any sort of Nielsen sort of number. It's the first time it's been measured.
Yeah.
You know, I hear that it may not be the last time either, but this is why UFC was so important to Paramount Plus, to getting these sorts of audiences. 7 million for a streaming exclusive. No CBS simulcast like we've seen with some other numbered fights. This was strictly Paramount Plus. And, you know, John talked about the NHL number. This probably put a little dent into Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals. 7 million viewers on Paramount Plus. You can imagine if it was on CBS alone, you're probably talking well north of 10 million viewers. Maybe it could be even 15 million viewers if you had it on broadcast TV like that. But UFC and Paramount Plus, they wanted to grow Paramount Plus. Adam Stern wrote for us how big, and you mentioned it, Richard, how big it was for people downloading that app because they got to grow. They got to get the pie bigger for what Paramount Plus is delivering. And this was the first. And I mean, this was an extreme case being at the White House, but it shows what UFC could potentially do for Paramount Plus in the long term.
Yeah, listen, I think like for them, a great media story. We're not going to spend an hour on like whether it should have been held at the White House. You have your own choices to sort of make on whether the White House should be hallowed ground and not host a sporting event. I'm certainly happy to say publicly, because obviously I've said it on social media, an absolute jabroni, that guy who insulted Michelle Obama. Like, that is bullshit.
They got a black eye from that. It was just
And like, I mean, I appreciate Dana White calling it out. It would have been nice if, like, I saw a lot of other people call it out. But that's just dumb in terms of even publicity, because you had, at least when I read the UFC media type, say this was like a perfect event. It went off perfectly. Like, the fights were great. Again, I don't know anything about the fighters, but the people like who cover this stuff said like it was a really good card, like, for what they do. And then you're right, Austin, like, you have that kind of comment and you're going to alienate so many people. But going back to you, John, should I read anything into this in terms of like UFC and combat sports about like the potential, like if they were on a CBS, like in a primetime spot, like could they get like many more casual fans than like, I hate to, I'm all roundabout here because it's not my expertise, but some of my thought then goes back to like the White House thing just feels like an eventized thing. Again, it's like it was a cool thing for people who are into this to see these fighters in front of the White House. But I don't know if you're going to get a casual fan just to tune in on a random Saturday night to watch the UFC. If it's in, you know, like the Conseco Fieldhouse, you know, just pick your random stadium in the United States. At least that's my take. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, you're right. It was obviously an event, and I think that's why it got 7 million viewers. I mean, it did top, and I'm not 100% sure. It's Nielsen custom analysis. I'm not sure how analogous that is to a regular Nielsen figure. We know from that YouTube NFL game, the YouTube custom methodology that Nielsen created was not comparable to the numbers from the other networks. So I don't want to make a direct comparison, but obviously, assuming that these are apples to apples, it did beat that Stanley Cup final game, which is kind of amazing for a streaming exclusive event. You know, Austin, you brought up the NFL Network. The Peacock's exclusive last year for the NFL was 9.7 million. That's not that far off. I mean, it is far off, but it's not that far off. And, you know, UFC's a niche, right?
It is.
It's closer to the NHL and closer to NASCAR and IndyCar. Well, this was kind of an Indy 500 audience, and it was on streaming. So I don't think it was a bad number at all. Obviously, I'm not even going to get into any of the Super Bowl comparisons. I mean, I don't think anyone, you know, at that point, that's just not even worth addressing. But I do think that, to me, if you're asking me, is it the most impressive UFC number I've seen this year? No, not really, because it was such a one-off event. I'm more impressed by the 2.81 and 2.77 million for the CBS hour-long windows of the main events earlier in the year. You know, those are the events you're talking about. The random, just kind of one-off, no real hype behind them, ordinary Saturday night. I mean, 2.8, 2.7, that's a pretty good national audience for, you know, for example, Sunday night. I think Sunday night baseball this year, their high was maybe 2.6. So that's a pretty good number to me. And that's something that you can repeat. I don't really think they probably can't repeat a White House fight. Yeah. But I do think
it's tough to go outdoors. Dana White said he's not going to do the White House again, but he had said in the past, I don't know that we could ever go outdoors, and maybe this is a one-off, but I mean, can you imagine if they try to go July 4th again next year, but did it in front of Mount Rushmore or something like that? Like, something crazy that I'm not thinking of. Maybe once a year you can try something like that, but indoor venues, I don't know where you could go that would really have this sort of juice, like people wanting to see what the environs are for the fight.
Well, you know, we talk about, I mean, think about NASCAR this week. They're on a naval base, right? And it's fascinating. You look at the track and you're like, well, are we 100% sure that the cars can't go into the sea here? You know, I mean, it's a little dangerous, right? And you have to go for it. You have to create these things. MLB is going back to Field of Dreams this year. You know, we've had these kind of one-off event style spectacles in the past. This one obviously at a whole other level because of the location, but this is just what leagues do. This is what the NHL does every year, dating back to that 2008 Winter Classic. You know, I mean, the NBA doesn't do it the same way, but there's a reason those courts in the in-season tournament are so colorful.
Yeah. And what was the most watched NHL regular season game this season? It was the outdoor game. Yeah. It was the one down in Tampa. So people do want to see these in different environments. Put it on an aircraft carrier. We've seen a basketball game do it. Why can't a UFC fight do it? You can get, like John said, the leagues are getting more creative on where they do their games.
Yeah, which is smart because, like, a lot, you know, the environment and the atmosphere can be a selling point and has been a selling point.
Clearly, so
I totally understand that. All right, we're going to wrap up. I mean, I assume you guys don't you're good to wrap up, and you don't want to do 20 minutes on any kind of potential or non-potential ESPN Fox fighting over World Cup coverage. No, we're not going down that road. But once again, a very amusing media back and forth in terms of Fox and ESPN, and depending on you believe if it is a story or not. Here, we'll do this fun. Last thing before I get you guys out of here. Give me your quick off the top head U.S. Australia viewership number, and then I'll address it next week.
Combine Telemundo Fox or Fox alone?
You can combine it with Telemundo.
I think it's going to get 23 million viewers.
Okay, so less than Paraguay. Okay, yeah, what about you, John?
I'm just going to go Fox only. I'm going to say 17.6 for Fox only.
Okay, that would put it a little higher than also. I'm going to say combined 25 million.
Okay.
Okay. I'll just sort of leave it there. It's very tricky to figure out the 3 o'clock start time.
That's why I want a little less.
We are on a holiday. And I also think it's summer and people are just jetting out of work early, right? Especially in some cities that, you know, summer is welcome, or spring, late spring is welcome. Okay.
Now that I've said 23, you know it's going to be 30 because this is going to be a whole
game. I know. I've been low on everything this tournament, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like insane, you know. And then we'll get 50 tweets from Mike Mulvihill if it's like 31 million or something crazy like that. All right. John Lewis is the editor and founder of Sports Media Watch. Austin Karp is the sports media reporter for Sports Business Journal. Stay with me, fellas, as I'm going to wrap this entire thing up with you two here. Head to the archives if there are subjects that you are interested in. The previous podcast before this one, we had Monica McNutt and Mike Breen on calling the NBA Finals and what that meant to them. Very kind of New York-centric podcast, but two very, very good broadcasters, and they were excellent. Chad Finn was on not too long ago. We talked about, can the NBA and the NHL extend the momentum behind the postseason? John and the Sports Media Watch guys, we did sort of a deep dive into NBA viewership there. And then again, Al Michaels on this podcast in May, Ian Eagle on this podcast in May. I believe Austin Karp was the backup guest to Al Michaels on that episode. So, you know, the two of them have combined to call 18 Super Bowls or whatever. But again, if you like this stuff, please leave us a review and a nice note. It's always appreciated, and that's how the podcast continues. Want to thank Jake Alley for producing this podcast on what is an off day for him. Very much appreciate him stepping up and doing that. Want to thank Odyssey, as always, for all their support. And most of all, thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast. We'll be right back.
as the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup. Make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.